You're listening to The Positive Professional with me, Tracy Yvonne.
Today's episode is sponsored by Ivy Elite Training. Are you looking for low-cost online personal development workshops? Topics including diversity and inclusion, health and wellness, work-life balance, emotional intelligence, and more. Visit www.ivyelitetraining.com. Again, that's www.ivyelitetraining.com.
Welcome and thanks for tuning in to another episode. Last month, I interviewed Dr. LaShawn Paul, the owner of the Social Work Diva, about social media and social work practice. Well, for today's interview, the topic's going to be again about social media, but the focus is going to be about the Clubhouse app. On February 5th, The Griot published an article by Dr. Flint titled "Black Psychologist Warns About the Mental Health Dangers of Clubhouse." Dr. Flint said that the popular social media app creates a false sense of intimacy for users who feel safe to share their personal traumas. Now, Dr. Flint and I met through Clubhouse, and we are actually part of a coalition, as we call it, of other licensed mental health clinicians who have the same concerns about Clubhouse. I am thankful that Dr. Flint has allowed me to interview her to discuss why she wrote the article and again to educate the community about some of the dangers of the Clubhouse app. So let's get into the interview.
So welcome, Dr. Flint. And again, thank you. I'm going to give our audience an opportunity to get to know you. So please introduce yourself, where you were educated and what type of work that you do.
Okay. Let me start with education. I have a PsyD from Georgia School of Professional Psychology. I also have a private practice. I'm a clinical psychologist licensed in the state of Louisiana. And I have a private practice here called 21 Senses NOLA, or 21 Senses Healing. I've been here now since 2017 in New Orleans, and I have had the practice for over 2 years now. So that's what I'm doing here. I have an emphasis in African-centered practice as well as trauma, specializing in anxiety.
Thank you. So let's get into the article. The Griot, Black Psychologist Warns About Mental Health Dangers on Clubhouse. Now, of course, I know why you wrote the article, and I was very excited, you know, when I saw it, as well as those of us licensed clinicians who are on Clubhouse, but want to be able to give you this platform to share with the audience. What made you write the article?
Oh, gosh, so much. As I was, you know, I was excited about being on Clubhouse because it's a novel application and I really like these kind of social media technologies. I like to be like an early adopter if I can. So I'm always curious about what's happening. I get on and of course I'm excited. So I'm like, let me look up the mental health stuff because I can have all these conversations with all the mental health folks, like learn and, you know, and grow. And I made the mistake of like clicking on like mental health advocates, you know, because I thought that that would be us, right? And it was almost like, I think it was like one of the first rooms I ended up in. They were having a meeting about, it was mental health something. And it looked like it was going to be like very educational. But then as I started clicking on people's bios, I realized that none of the people were actual professionals. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll have something to contribute, if anything. And then like 20 minutes into it, someone gets on and starts telling this really horrific story of their own trauma. And they're audibly distressed because they, you know, they have that tearful voice, they're trembling. And people are on there literally giving them like advice, like trying to do interventions. And I'm like, oh no, 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 no. And so I jump in and say, well, you know, here are some numbers that you can call, you know, trying to give some type of outside resources because the person seemed to be really in distress. And then I jump out of the room because I'm like, okay, this is clearly going to be bad. And so I go into a couple more rooms with professionals this time, and I'm seeing the same stuff. And then I see this room saying, bring us your trauma, or let's talk about trauma. And I was like, oh no, who like, literally, you are asking people to come to Clubhouse in a Clubhouse room that you don't know, you've never met, you haven't done even informed consent with, and you are asking them to break all manner of confidentiality And talk about trauma in a room full of strangers. And you don't have access to this person if that person becomes dysregulated or becomes a danger to themselves or other people or becomes gravely disabled mentally in this process. So I said, okay, there's something dangerous about this. In the meantime, I was meeting you and we were having these conversations about how dangerous it is. So almost simultaneously, we had formed this coalition and started doing the town hall. And I mentioned that I was writing about this because I was talking to another friend of mine who's a well-known author and she's also a mentor of mine. And I was telling her about it. She was like, you should write about it. And I was like, whatever. And so she kind of browbeat me into it because, you know, she knows that I need to be doing it, but I probably would not have had she not pushed me. And so I was starting to say, like, I'm writing about it as a way of really just making myself go ahead and do it because it needed to be said and it needed to be part of the history that someone had said it. So that's kind of how it got started. I wrote up the article, sent it to the editor, and then she actually sent me the article because I forgot. And when I saw it, I just was like, oh my God. So it's like a combination of some personal stuff around like me needing to just do writing and then excitement that finally this had been, now it's part of the literature. Now it's like, you know, out there and more people can see and take a look at it and understand that them going to Clubhouse is not going to be the healing that they think it is.
So one, it also got picked up, I think, AOL picked it up as well, or Yahoo.
Yeah.
The article as well. So again, right, it needs to be out there. But let's talk about, because you said the app creates a false sense of intimacy for users who feel safe to share their personal experiences, personal trauma. And I wanted to kind of go more in depth with that conversation for those who may not be on the app, right? So this is it's an audio, so you cannot see the person, mm-hmm. right? So let's talk about breakdown false sense of intimacy. What does that mean?
So seemingly because you can hear a person's voice. So on typical social media platforms, there is just the typing, right? So there's just text. And so there's really not a whole lot of intimacy that happens from a sensory standpoint, right? You're just texting and people just kind of make their own meaning of it. But when you're on here, there's the added power of voice. So it feels closer. It feels like I can hear that person. It feels very personal and very intimate, right? And so there's a lot of people doing that. And you start to feel like I belong now. I'm in a group of people. We're all kind of flowing in the same direction. Or I can come and talk to a group of people and I can feel very connected and like I belong. On the surface, that sounds like, yes, great. Right. But that is a false sense of intimacy. You are not intimate with a bunch of strangers in one room. You are just in the room with a bunch of strangers. And that may make you feel good and connected during that time. But when you log off of Clubhouse, these strangers, you do not know them. They're not with you. So what that does is it just makes you addicted to the application because of you have specific chemicals around senses of belonging. Right? Dopamine, oxytocin, which people go back and forth on that being the connection and belonging driver, or that when there is this kind of intimate space. Serotonin. So you have things that impact your mood that you become then addicted to because they're going to rise when you are in this setting. And so you get to see, so Clubhouse becomes the object that you become attached to in order to make yourself feel better. That is called an addiction, right? If you constantly do it and you're doing it over and over, because I see people on here all day long. And so it is somewhat concerning to me that, you know, this is a place where you feel that you must go to do that and you can't do anything else. So it takes you away from the real work of doing that work to make yourself, because, you know, right now, and it came out at the very best time because people are quarantined, they're feeling very isolated already. So I think the app really, whether it was deliberate or not, took a good advantage of what was happening in the world at this time, what is happening. Also, I think that creates a lot of vulnerable people who are vulnerable to these types of attachments, right, to this application, but it is not healing. It is an attachment, and it is an unhealthy attachment in many ways.
Thank you for explaining that. So could I say it's because of this, the audio of it is what makes it so mm-hmm. popular and different. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, you can go live on Instagram. You can go live on Facebook. Yeah. They have these live events.
But those aren't inherent into the application. Like, you can set that up. Mm-hmm. But Clubhouse is like, that is what it is. It is inherent to the application. And so, like, you know, not everybody's going to know how to set that up. Like, I know a lot of people who still don't know how to set up IG Live, you know, and it's really simple, but it's like a no brainer. Like, you know, you just jump on, and then on IG Live, it's not that, you know, they don't have like rooms, right, where you can, you know, so Clubhouse kind of puts it all out there. It gives you a menu, you can select. You can follow the same folks. You can do all these things that they just have a lot more detail in the app was created for that. So it's going to be very different than an IG Live or, you know, and then you don't have to set that up, right? You don't have to set it up for yourself. You don't have to do any of that. You can just jump in, right? Whereas on Instagram, you wouldn't even know who to follow to get in their IG Live, right? On Clubhouse, you have a whole hallway of things you can select from. So it's really titillating and wonderful in many ways. But my thing is, on this mental health standpoint, the added idea of voice and the ability to be able to easily access those voices and those rooms just give it that extra added benefits in many ways, but it can be harmful in other ways.
Would you say more like it gives it more of a human connection for some mm-hmm. as to why mm-hmm. they're on it?
Yeah, it makes, you know, because you feel like you have a lot more autonomy, you know, in terms of what you can select. Now they're breaking it down. You can actually choose topics that you want to go into. And it's set up for that for a reason, right? Like, because I've used it to go into topics that I love. And that has served me. But also, I'm thinking about it from someone's point of view. If I'm like really lonely and I really want to just talk to people about my mental health situation, there's a lot of people on Clubhouse who are honestly just straight up hustlers. and they will hustle you using something that they know that you're very vulnerable around, which is your mental state.
So we're going to do, and I want to get into that because, you know, there are benefits, right, of Clubhouse, but there are a side where you have those who are professionals licensed and non-professionals who are taking advantage of people. So we're going to take a quick break. And after that, we're going to go into that some more. So we are back, and Dr. Flynn, you had said something before in the first segment in reference to dopamine, right? And it just reminded me of an article that I read before about when you're engaging in social media and how it can like activate like your online, like your reward center, right? And it's really kind of like when you're receiving a lot of online likes, the reward center of the brain, right? Which is called the nucleus accumbens, if I'm not mistaken, it lights up. Right. And a lot of times with excessive use of this type of interaction, it trains the brain to, right, to release rewarding chemicals such as dopamine, which mm-hmm. is what you talked about. And these releasing rewards, right, dopamine, as much as the same way like addiction works in reference to things like drugs or shopping or even gambling. And this is very worrisome, right, because the more that you're engaging in social media, the more you're going to expect to have this type of effect in order to feel happy. So how does Clubhouse play into that? Especially like when you're navigating, as we call like the hallway, right? And for those who are not on Clubhouse, the hallway mm-hmm. is kind of like what you can see on your phone or on your iPad, because right now it's just for iPhone users, a list of topics. And these topics, as you and I both know, Dr. Flynn, are not regulated. And some of the topics are very inappropriate. Yeah. Some of the topics are racist. some of the topics are also concerning in reference to someone's mental health. So if you can give examples of what are some of the topics that you've seen that you think could be helpful for the general community, and what are some of the topics that you would deem as a mental health professional, which is concerning, if you don't mind sharing.
Well, I want to answer the first part of your question about the chemicals, because it's not just dopamine, and it's also, there are other chemicals. There's also other body systems that are at play. And Clubhouse operates much like any other social media platform in terms of what it does for the person feeling that reward, and also what it does for the person feeling very connected to other people. It depends on where that dopamine spikes in the brain, because dopamine can be released and certain parts of the brain can be impacted by that. The brain works very diffusely. So I want to just be sure that I'm making it clear that dopamine isn't the only driver, although it is extremely important to this social media process. The second piece of that is it is also this sense of connection and belonging. That is a huge piece to this that people, I think, get attached to. And especially now with the whole isolation and loneliness being the kind of way that things that people are truly struggling with, I think it just primes people to be attached and extremely connected in very maladaptive ways to this application, which leads me to the room situation. So when you're looking on the hallway, it's really whatever jumps out at you. You know, like if you're one of those people who feel like, okay, I want to see a discussion about men that bashes women, you're going to find that on Clubhouse. And so if it says, you know, men who don't need women, or, you know, whatever, because I've seen some really bizarre titles just today, like something said, why men don't have to look for a wife, but women have to take whatever they can get in a husband. I was like, what? Right? So it's like these bizarre rooms in all of these future shop, you know, stuff like that rooms that sound like fun. Actually, I just don't go in them because I don't need to shoot my shot. But it just, some of them sound like a lot of fun. One of our dear friends who's also on the coalition, Dr. Rose, they do like a matchmaking thing, and they have a chill and chat that I think is extremely fun. And so that's like making good use of this application, right? And then you have rooms like, let's talk about trauma, or let's talk about your, like one person said, come here, we're going to talk about being sexually molested. That's dangerous. That's not to me. That is just dangerous, factual. And so those types of rooms are like a no. But I've also been in some really amazing rooms. There's like a group of Black spiritualists. This one young woman, her name is Chantrell Lewis. She hosts one that's kind of educating people about African traditional religion, which is like a lot of history, a lot of cultural stuff, background, you know, very ancestral. So you feel like, you know, very spiritually inclined and very, very deeply rooted in African history or African-American history. There's another room that I make it a point to go in every time I see it on genetics. That's always some learning. Any neuroscience room, you can probably find me dipping in there. I'll be sitting in the audience just listening, right? And so those are some of the rooms. You have, you know, everything from like, there's a lot of like naturopathic doctors that show up. All the things about, you know, Black doctors are there. There's a microbiologist that hosts a room. And like, I think there's a weekly hosting on the microbiome, the gut, you know, and mental health. And so those types of educational rooms are really, really important. I think they make a significant contribution. And I don't see enough of those rooms from the mental health perspective. And I think we owe it to ourselves and the public to create that. I mean, you and me, we've done some of those education rooms and we will continue to do those. But I don't see like a vast, it's like starting this firestorm of rooms where oftentimes I see very few Black people in the room, right? And so that's why it's important for more of us to get together and really talk about, be about education and awareness and really bringing this profession to make it more solid on this app to kind of combat that if we're going to be on the app. Because not everyone wants to be, to offset some of that really dangerous stuff, to provide these alternatives and helping people to connect to therapists. In my bio on Clubhouse, I have, oh, you want to get a Black psychologist? Here are some of the links, right? And I list them all. And so, you know, everything from therapy for Black girls to, you know, positive professional. So I think that we can then start to help people to access, because a lot of therapists now are doing sliding scale and pro bono work to help people access these things and also help them to understand why this is a particular danger to their own body and their minds, their spirit.
Right. Like I said, it has good aspects of it, right? Mm-hmm. Where you can get education, you know, awareness. Again, we all met on Clubhouse just because we happened to mm-hmm. be in these rooms. We were like, wait a minute. And then we happened to be in one room and we were all in there while they were discussing these concerns that we were seeing. But it's important for the general community to know that there are people who are literally scamming people and taking advantage and preying on people. And I'm hoping that more people will continue to speak up to the founders of this app. Again, this is the second interview that I've done for this season. And Dr. Paul, who I interviewed last month, she is no longer on Clubhouse for that reason, because it was too much for her. But I wanted her to talk about, because we're both clinical social workers, just about just the dangers of us who are licensed professionals and how we are holding space in some of these rooms. One of the misconceptions that was going around, especially when I first joined it, was, well, if you're going to have these types of conversations, you should have a mental health professional in a room. And I was like, no, let's pump your brakes. That's not our role, is to sit in a room or to sit in panels when people are opening and sharing their traumas, because that could be a licensure problem for all of us.
I was in a room where people were doing intervention in the room. Like, they were talking about literally doing therapy on Clubhouse. Like, how do we do this on Clubhouse? Like, come and get this advice from us. And I just think that that's just totally misguided. It misleads people. And this happens, and I want to say, because I do need to be fair about this, is happening on other social media apps.
Correct. That is, no, that is correct.
Clubhouse isn't just the one, but it does have that extra added piece around it being a vocal, and it has a lot of spaces where people can connect to that. There are many people on here who are offering those things. And I think that makes it a very dangerous space, especially since you have people who are saying they're life coaches, things like that, without having specific training in psychology. And that could get people into a lot of trouble and be harmful for people. And that my biggest piece is, do no harm. And sometimes that does, you know, for me, it's like, if I start to hear anything, I'm out. I'm just like, and even when I do a room, I will say, that's not what this is about, you know, or this is for education and awareness. I think our coalition, we've already done work around trying to reach out to some of these people who are associated with Clubhouse, talking about these issues. So we've done that work, and I think we'll continue to do that work. And I think about that too, is like, where will this go? And I think because we have done that work, I am now seeing people who have been following us now saying something very different on Clubhouse. I'm really starting to see some people trying to change that. Like, they're literally using our words in their room names.
So Dr. Flynn, what are some of the things that you think that we can continue to do to combat this? Like, you wrote the article. I hope others continue to write articles as well. But what are some other things that you think? I know we've been trying to have these conversations, and town halls are just trying to connect with other like-minded professionals who are on Clubhouse, just to, because again, as you said, do no harm is profound, right? But what are some other things that you think that can be done to kind of bring more awareness to this?
I think more of what we're doing. I don't think that, you know, there's a variety of things. I think there's a few really strong things you can do over and over, such as create a coalition, such as continue to voice that to the creators, developers, and anyone who's associated with Clubhouse. Continue to put literature out about it. Continue to educate people about, because oftentimes, like, what I've been hearing literally has been people who don't know what therapy is about, or who may have been harmed in a therapy process, or may have even not been necessarily harmed, but have really had bad therapy or didn't connect with a therapist. And so what they then start to internalize is that therapy is bad or therapy doesn't work for me, right? I literally heard somebody say, I don't like therapy, but will come on Clubhouse and talk about their deepest, darkest secrets, like, you know, like their deepest wound. So you don't like therapy. How many times have you gone? Once. Was that a social worker, a LPC, psychologist, psychiatrist who, oh, it was a life coach. Oh, well, you know what I'm saying? So the education piece is so important because people need to hear, especially people of color, what is therapy? They need information. They need to know how to, okay, once you know what generally it is, how do you know when you need it? Can you just do it as just maintenance? Sometimes people, you don't have to be in dire straits to do therapy. Sometimes you just need a little maintenance. You need coping skills or management skills, things like that. You may want to know something new about your body and how it works with your stress, your own unique reactions to your stress, right? So there's a plethora of things you can learn about you in your journey to self-discovery through therapy. But I think it's important for us to be in places where the people are sharing with the people so that they are clear about themselves and what their need is and not just jumping on to just feel good in that moment. And then when they're done, they feel bad again. So now they got to come back to feel good again and then leave and you feel bad again. And then you have to come back, right? So then that's a vicious cycle. To arrest that flow, I think that education and awareness is critical.
And that's where I think where the app or any other social media platform can be used for good. But as we know, there are people who take advantage. Mm-hmm. There are times where I wonder, you know, if you're on it 24, and again, there's people on in different time zones, right? Who are on it 24 hours and sometimes are holding space in rooms that are 3 and 4 and 5 hours, which is a lot. I think it's a lot on the brain. It's a lot that you're processing. Sometimes people, if you want to come to the stage just to say and share, you're waiting 3.5 hours to even share what you want to say. So you're trying to hold on to like your own thought process of what you want to be able to share, but then you're also listening for hours and it's just not healthy. But that's just the way that, you know, it is intentionally set up to get people wanting to come back for more. So I always say just to be intentional with your time when you're on it and, you know, be intentional if you're going to be hosting, be intentional with the language, which is what we have, you know, started to talk about. And there has been changes in reference to some of the topics of rooms from our first town hall that we've talked about because it was very concerning. And I was a little surprised, I guess, me being naive, that it was our peers that were doing this. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Because I wasn't seeing this on Facebook or Instagram, but I know it does happen. But I am starting now to see that, you know, that there's lives and as long as you're doing it for information, because it's important to share information and to educate the general community. But if you're drawing people in so they can share, that's unethical and that's problematic. So I hope that you're going to be writing more articles about this. And I hope others who are listening, I know there was an article, I did see an article the other day from Black medical doctors that wrote an article, I think it was in Bloomberg, about trying to dispel myths about the coronavirus vaccine. And then there were other doctors, because there was an incident that happened with another Black female doctor that was bullied in the room by other people. I'm not mentioning names because I have no money to be sued, but it was an unfortunate incident to where she became mentally unwell, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember reading the Twitter feed and it broke my heart to read what happened to her. But I was very happy to see other doctors, like the public health doctors, rally behind her. But these are the things that are happening, right? And this is a medical doctor, MD, public health doctor who's risking their lives, right? Combating coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I guess, a difference of opinion. I was not in that room.
So ties in to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's part of the dangers, because part of what I had heard about that same incident is a mental health problem. And this is what happens when people are just wilding out in a room. Like, this lady is clearly working on the front line. So she knows. And you know, it's like when you come into a room, they don't really have to hold a space. They don't have to hold a professional space. And they often don't if there's no real rule. Like people have the rooms have rules, but it's up to the moderators to enforce them, right? And so things like that can get really out of hand in these rooms. And I felt for this woman too. It was heartbreaking, you know, to see someone who is a professional, who is licensed, who works on the front lines, to be treated in such a way because she just wants to, in her mind, to save lives and how that can go. And I've been in rooms where people have literally challenged me, you know, but with all kinds of, like I was in a room and I just happened to mention that Clubhouse was potentially dangerous. And I will say, I'm saying Clubhouse, but I mean being on there because it's the people on Clubhouse that makes that uniquely dangerous with the developers and people associated with them. Is that I feel like, and maybe they just have not figured it out yet. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Rules around things that could potentially be life-threatening, like having someone come in and talk about suicide without holding a space for those people. And that one town hall we were in where people, the person actually admitted that this was happening, right? With someone and they had like peer support or whatever, which may work for those people, but we know that we have distinct traumas in our community, Black and Brown community, that don't look like other community. And so who, if not us, to help to protect our people when they're at their most vulnerable? And that is one of the primary reasons why I did this article. And shout out to the GRIO for taking it and publishing it. Just, I can't say enough about that publication. I've been following it for a long time. So I was very honored to be a contributor and be a contributor with a story that I feel very passionate about.
Well, again, I thank you. I shared it on all of my social media platforms. When you posted in our group, I was like, yay, you know, and maybe it'll inspire me to do some writing, which who knows. But I think the more of us that speak up, because there are a lot of these conversations that are still happening. There's a lot of bullying that's happening. You have a lot of people who are moderating rooms intentionally to do gaslighting. And again, you can always just more self-awareness, be intentional about when you're going into the room, right? So of course we can control that by whether or not we're going and using the app, but it's still just to understand, you know, think of your protective factors, right? How you're doing your self-care. Maybe you don't have to go on the app and have those conversations. Try to connect with a friend or a family member, someone who you feel is trusted. The other day, actually it was yesterday, I happened to just be scrolling on Instagram and I happened to see a woman who was doing a Facebook Live while holding their phone while they were in a Clubhouse room. And I say this to say in reference to confidentiality, right? So you're talking in a room and you're sharing that person. One could have other people in a room who could technically hear what you're saying, or they could be going live on another platform and it's amplifying to another audience. So you hear the audio of the Clubhouse room going on and they're having an IG live. And again, I don't know if there was a disclaimer or something that was said at the beginning of the room. I just happened to see it. So I was like, that's very interesting. So I know that they have once a week meetings, the developers, to talk about it. I have yet to hear any conversation about the concerns that I have raised to them be addressed in a town hall. I have missed a couple because I try not to now go on it. Maybe they have, but I want to be able to use my platform to have these conversations. I want to use my platform once a month to highlight who I call positive professionals. I'm very happy to have met all of you because we all have the same concern and share the same thought process in reference to ethics as professionals. So before I end this great interview, which I'm so thankful for, I'm going to ask you, Dr. Flint, what makes you a positive professional?
Thank you for asking. Well, you know, I thought about this. If I say positive, then there must be a negative. So, and I kind of try not to use like dichotomous words or these kind of polarizing words, but I love the positive professional so much. I like the way it makes me feel when I say it. that alliteration, something about it. Like, but I think what I would say makes me a positive professional is my constant journey of my own healing and desire, an active desire to be in attunement with other people, and my relentless advocacy for Black and Brown people wherever I am.
Thank you very much for that. And I always, again, this is part of my, when I do my once a month interview to ask people what are positive professionals. It's my brand that I really want to grow and just to spread, you know, positivity.
Beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, in the community. So thank you again for this interview. And of course, I'll be seeing you around some of our good rooms on Clubhouse.
Yes. Thank you always for your support, Tracy. I really appreciate it. And positive professional, thank you so much for having me. I am really honored that you chose me to talk about this.
You're most welcome.
Thanks for joining me today. I look forward to you tuning in to another episode. Make sure that you've subscribed to this podcast and don't forget to click the like button. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram. Stay safe and be well.